This is Jason David Frank, and you're listening to the GeekCast Radio Network.
You are now on the inside of what I like to call the circle of trust. We are all connected in the great circle of life.
You know something, Bert?
What?
I think you and I are going in circles.
It feels like we're going in circles.
Circle is now complete. When I left you, I was but the learner. Now I am the master.
Because it's a circle.
Yeah, we heard about the circle.
Yes, we're familiar with shapes.
Hi, this is Chuck.
This is Greg.
And this is Dan, and we are Talking in Circles, brought to you by the GeekCast Radio Network, the podcast that is about to get strange. And it's fitting because that was a bad pun, and so was Strange Full of Them, as today we are talking about the Marvel's 80th movie, 67th movie, Doctor Strange. We'll get to that in our second segment. Before we get to the front of Doctor Strange, how are things been going for you guys?
Yeah, pretty good, I guess. Not too much going on. Been doing a little hunting lately, getting outdoors and stuff.
Have you seen any return of the bear since last time?
I have not. I've not seen the bear anymore. Even though I'm like, my deer stand is like right where the bear were, but I have not seen them come back. So
it was a werebear.
What's that?
It's a werebear.
It is a werebear. Yeah, they howl and everything.
Oh, cool. Nice.
But
nice.
The creepy thing was though, when last weekend, like it's been. Somewhat, the last couple of Saturdays have been kind of like unseasonably warm, I guess you could say. And
yeah, it's been weird.
Yeah, and like the only drawback with that in the woods is ticks.
Oof.
And so
not the character, right? Because
no,
spoon, all that. Okay,
not the big blue ones, but the super creepy, real, you know, little black ones. My dad and I were the only ones hunting there, but between the two of us throughout the whole day, we ended up counting it up. He had 8 ticks on him. I had 13.
And Chuck's the winner, everybody.
Now, I'm not talking like they weren't like embedded in the skin, but they were on me. Like some of them were on my clothing, but a couple of them were actually crawling on my skin and stuff. So it kind of weirds you out. It gets in your head a little bit. You know, every little thing you feel, you're like, oh, is that another one? You know, like, but it's just like, it's not too bad because, like, you realize they have to be kind of, you know, embedded in you for, like, I think it's 48 hours to transmit the Lyme disease virus and stuff like that. But it's still just creepy. They're like little 8-legged things. They kind of feel like a spider when they're crawling on you. It's really creepy. And plus, they can't die, it seems like. They're kind of like Deadpool. It's just you've like I pick these things up and like even with your fingernails or like a sharp object, like you can't even squish them. Like I can't explain it. They're just so like ridiculous. I don't know, but I pretty much just like flick them off of me. So it's really creepy.
We would get those a lot when I was working at summer camp. You'd always see kids and they'd be freaked out and not know what that is or think, hey, I have a mole. I'm like, no, that's a tick. Greg, how are things going with you?
No ticks. No little buggies running on me, thankfully. But things have been all right. I don't think I have a fun little anecdotic story or anything. I've just been kind of going to work, working, coming back home, watching football, reading, writing. I started working out again, so maybe I could be as buff as Chuck someday, but that's a long way down the road.
Well, Chuck's getting a little fat right now.
It's around the holiday. You gotta, you know, it's gonna get colder. You gotta hibernate. And
well, that Halloween candy for the last 2 weeks kind of hurt me.
See, are you a big candy person? Because I could live without candy, but my thing is like cakes or desserts like that kind of stuff that kind of really kills me.
Like, I think I am kind of into candy because, like, they're so small and it's just, like, so tempting to just have 18 more. And I don't know. Like, and I don't like – there's certain candies I don't like. But, like, Kit Kats and Reese's are my Achilles. Like, I just start popping those, and then it's like, oh crap, I ate the whole bag. Not quite, but you know what I mean. It's just hard to stop.
Once you pop, you cannot stop.
And the weird thing is, like, you know, we had to be prepared in case we got trick-or-treaters, like, but we didn't get any. So, like, we had all this candy left over, and it's like, well, what the hell do we do with this now?
We just shut the lights off at my house. Nobody comes to our house. I think it's the stairs.
You're that house?
Yeah. I think it's the amount of stairs that we have in front of our house. Nobody, like, approaches our house at all. Like, so we stopped buying candy, like, years ago for that. So
I'm going to come next year and knock on your door.
You'll probably get a Kind bar or I think we have Doritos downstairs. You could take a bag of Doritos. But, yeah. Protein shake. We have protein shakes.
Yeah, that could work.
Those are yummy.
Yeah, that's very true. Well, my last few weeks have been interesting. Like, if, you know, things could just stop hitting cars I own, that would be appreciated. So we've been off break for a little bit, mainly because apparently things just like hitting cars I own. I had a deer run into my car, and then my wife got rear-ended not too long ago and got hit pretty hard. Like, it was her. I at first thought it was like a fender bender, but then I actually saw her car, and like the right side of her car was like just squished in, like a good, I don't know, 2 to 3 feet on the right hand side. It was like intense how hard she got hit. She was actually lucky she didn't sustain more damage. But the funny thing of it, not, I don't know if it's funny, but she got hurt in the accident, and she had a huge bump on her head, a hematoma, and then eventually it started kind of making her eyes look black and blue. And around the same time, day or two before, my son fell at playground and hit his eye off the side of the playground, and he had a black and blue eye. So we're like out in public, and I'm thinking, people are gonna think I beat my family because everyone's looking like all deranged. I'm like, this is not good.
Well, fortunately, though, you live in the same town as Ray Rice, so I don't think people care as much.
So, yeah, but I can't run like he does, so that's sure. The problem. So
I was going to say, not to make light of it, but with the whole Doctor Strange coming out with their eyes, did she look like that at all?
Yeah, a little bit. You know what? She could have. It's funny because she posted, we have a cluster, which is kind of like Instagram, but like for individuals. And she posted a photo of like her and my son. And she's like, I went as a zombie for Halloween. And one of her friends who didn't know that she was an accident thought it was actually zombie makeup. So.
Wow, that looks really good, Carol. Who did you get to do that?
It was like professionally made, so that was going on. So, but, and I do have something to admit, and it's, I'm not very proud of it. But I did want to, I kind of wanted to review, but we don't really have time tonight, so I'll just briefly talk about it. And it's something sad, but I do have to let you guys know I did something I'm not very proud of. I read my first manga comic.
Ew.
Yeah.
I'm just not a fan for whatever reason. I just
I gotta go. Actually, I'll talk to you guys later.
I know. So, long story short, I want to do this article at the end of the year, the top 100 comics of 2016. I don't know why it got in my head, so I've been trying to like read a bunch of things, and I was like, you know what? I'll give some manga stuff a shot. And I gave something called "I Am a Hero," which is a manga which I heard good things about. It's like a zombie story. It was good. I'll probably go more detail another day, but it was just kind of funny because I was reading it. And I know with manga, you have to go left to right. You read it backwards, like normally the way we do it, where the spine of the book is, I don't know how to, left, basically you start backwards.
You read left to right in English, yeah. And then I believe in language, it's right to left.
Yeah, so that, I knew I had to turn the book around and like begin that way, but I also didn't realize conversations happen that way too. Like, you have to follow the panels right to left, which, like, for the good, you know, the first 10 pages or so, I'm like, nothing makes sense. I don't understand it. And I just thought that was, like, a manga thing. So I had to go back, and once I figured it out, I'm like, oh, I am reading in the wrong direction. So
so wait, does that mean are you saying you read from the back of the book to the front, or it's just...
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So if you open it up, like, where you would normally open up a book, there's a big thing that says stop, you're at the back of the book. So you turn it on the other side, so it's like you're kind of reading the opposite direction, and then instead of, you know, with a normal comic, you start on the left-hand side and usually work your way over. But with these, you start on the right-hand side and work your way left. But I knew I was where I was supposed to start. I just didn't realize the panels were designed that way, too. So,
yeah, that would be extremely confusing to a long-time comic reader.
Yeah, it was like retraining my brain to read again. It was tough. But
so, would you read another manga again?
Actually, I have another one, too. And I got these from the library. And the amount of books I've gotten from the library is kind of insane over the last few weeks. It was okay. Like, I didn't love it as much as I heard some people. And I think part of the problem is a lot of it is, like, commentary on manga itself that I just didn't really understand. And it's a little weird. Like, there's just this guy would see things. And I didn't know if that was, like, I couldn't tell if it was a product of the story or a product of manga. So I think I just need to read a little bit more to better understand the genre. So I have another one called A Girl on the Shore. And I don't know what that's really about, but I was going to give it a shot and see how it goes.
I've always heard good things about Attack on Titan, I heard is really good, which I've watched this one YouTuber, Jacksepticeye, that I watch at work sometimes. He plays a lot of video games, and I watched him play a video game for Attack on Titan, and it just seems very creepy, very bizarre kind of situation going on. It's like, it's almost like giant zombies almost. It's very weird.
I know it's on Netflix. I've seen the cartoon. I thought I'd pick that up, but I was purposely like focusing on stuff that was from 2016. I actually read this really thing that was actually I don't know, Chuck, if you would like it or not, but it is an adaptation of a bunch of Bible stories, mostly from the First Testament, like Ruth's story and this isn't manga. This is just a normal graphic novel.
Okay,
Mary's.
we just studied Ruth in my group, which is really weird.
Yeah. That's my grandmother's, well, who's passed away. That was my grandmother's name.
Oh, okay.
So we would talk about that story a lot. And a bunch of other ones. Like, it starts at, I think the beginning of, you know, with, Cain and Abel. And I don't think it's a true adaptation. It's been a while since I knew some of them. I think overall, a lot of the context is there, but I might send you, like, see what you think, but.
Yeah. What do you call it? The company? What's the name of the company?
I don't know off the top of my head, to be honest with
you. Okay. Because I was curious if it was the same, I forget what it's called, something press or something like that. I can't remember.
Cross Press.
Kingdom Press or something, I don't know.
I don't think that's it. I think it's like a normal, it's like a general publisher that's a pretty well, it's from what I remember.
Okay.
It's done by Chester Brown.
Oh, that guy.
And,
no, I don't know who he is.
it's done by Drawn in Quarterly, which is they do a lot of graphic novels. That's who did it. Cool. I guess he's done of other stuff, but I've never done. Anyways, so, but I don't know why I brought that up, and I had a point and I lost it. But we're going to have a little bit of a condensed episode here, so we're going to spend a lot of time on Doctor Strange, and I think we made a decision on what we're going to do is, maybe we can just start by giving some general thoughts, and we talked about it. There's a lot. It's hard to talk about Doctor Strange without getting into the details and getting into kind of like the what happened and all that good stuff. So we'll just do general thoughts, and then we'll go to break, and when we come back, we'll get into it and spoil away. So I guess, Greg, overall, you saw Doctor Strange. We've seen a lot of Marvel movies. Is it on par? Is it lesser than expected? Is it better? What did you
think? with Marvel movies overall, I think they're a little bit higher than normal movies, if you ask me. So their average of quality is also higher than the normal cinema average. And I thought this was an average Marvel movie, if you ask me. It was nothing too spectacular. Like, I still love Guardians and a whole bunch of the Avengers movies much more than this. But it was still really good. It was very well told. They had a very complex thing going on with magic and everything, because you kind of have to explain what the limitations are and what people can do and not do and everything like that. So I thought they did a great job explaining that. The confusing part was the visuals that they had thrown at you and them going so fast, running through the visuals. It would make your head spin. So that was kind of a drawback to it. But it was very well done. It was very actiony. Like, it was kind of like nonstop all the way through. Like, it was somewhat of a slow start, kicked up, backed off a little bit, and then just kept going towards the end of the film. So it was like quarter way through, it picked up, and then kind of went back down again. And then halfway through, it picked up and then just was relentless from there on. So it was really good in that respect, I thought. So I enjoyed it a lot more than a normal average movie, but it was still an average movie for Marvel, if you ask me.
Chuck, what did you think? You think it's similar as an average movie, or how does it stack up against like other origin stories we've seen from Marvel?
I would say overall, as a Marvel movie, I would kind of agree with Greg. It's kind of average, but I will say it exceeded my expectations I had going in. I think, as I even mentioned before, with the trailers and stuff like that, I was kind of iffy on it, you know, with the whole psychedelic folding cities and all that stuff. And that sort of held true for me. That stuff was like a little bit much. Like, I could have done with one scene, but they kind of kept showing stuff, and it was like really like trippy for me. I was kind of hoping they went into some different things instead of keep doing that. But I thought, though, for an origin story, I thought it was really well done. I found it very exciting and everything. And maybe that's because of the subject matter. I'm not sure. That was, you know, like a really fantastical type of thing, the sense of awe and wonder and everything like that. So that kind of keeps you really fascinated and on the edge of your seat the whole time, because you're kind of discovering this new world, and like every scene that unfolds in the movie, it's sort of like
a whole new world,
right? It's like a magic carpet ride, basically. No, but I thought it did a great job of inspiring the sense of wonder, which we got in a lot of the early Marvel movies, because it was like something we hadn't seen before, and it really got your geek meter going up to full throttle and everything. So that I did enjoy a lot, because I was kind of excited, like, who are they going to show? And, you know, we'll talk about that in the next part, but you know, what characters are they going to show? And I was pretty excited, like, hearing some of the names they were calling out and some of the objects they were talking about, and kind of like listening to the names, I'm like, oh, that's really cool, like, you know, they mentioned that, all the callbacks and stuff. So that was neat, just as a comic fan's perspective, to see that stuff. You know, from a basic movie standpoint, you know, I heard some people that really aren't as big into the comic movies as we are that liked it too. Like, they said it was a little, you know, a little out there, like kind of hard to grasp at first. But they said ultimately, once you watch the whole movie, get the whole picture, it was very well done. And I tend to agree.
I guess maybe, I don't know where I am compared to you guys, but I actually had pretty high expectations for this. I don't know. I guess I've been really enjoying the Doctor Strange comics that have been out by Jason Aaron recently. So I've been like kind of in hoping this would turn out really good. And I agree with what you were saying in general, Greg, that we're really deep into the Marvel films at this point. And we've seen a lot of origin stories to begin with outside of just Marvel, just comics in general. So it's challenging when we're going to get another one. And I know, like, it's unavoidable with someone like Doctor Strange, I think, because I don't think he's a character that you could just start off with and be like, hey, he's weird, and that's just it. Like, maybe they could have done it a little bit differently, but I kind of get what they were. I think they were thinking, okay, we're going to be going into some really odd, unique things here. I think we need to just plot structure-wise do what got us here. And I know the biggest gripe with Marvel films is that they're formulaic, and that Marvel has a formula, and they kind of just repeat that formula, and a lot of the problems that exist tend to exist the same way, like, you know, villain issues or what have you. You kind of know the cookie cutter, some people would say. And I guess I agree, but I guess I really like the formula. You know, it's like Bond movies. I enjoy the Bond movie formula. And, you know, at this point, we're probably like well into the Roger Moore era of if we were to compare Bond films, and we still haven't really got a bad one yet. So I give them credit for that. I thought it was visually really insane. Did you guys see this in 3D or IMAX? How did you guys see this?
No, because I think I would have threw up everywhere if I saw that in 3D.
Yeah, just the regular. Yeah.
See, I did see it in 3D because I heard go see it in 3D because it's made for 3D, and I think it was okay in 3D. I think a lot of the effects probably It probably could, I think, make people sick, because there's some, as we get into the crystal dimension and some of the craziness that goes on, it's like, wow, this is a little bit insane. I don't think I could stare at the screen for much longer and not just feel dizzy. So, but it was a little bit fun. I think it was probably maybe the only Marvel movie that's warranted 3D in any way. Not that you, I guess, need to warrant it.
The Thor movie, I think we saw the first Thor movie in 3D. I thought that was really well done.
That and maybe the second one too.
Dark World.
Dark World, because they have that portal battle, which I guess you could see.
Yeah, because I thought they did good with that, because especially with being in Asgard, I thought that was really well. That was a really good use of 3D to see all those buildings, and it gave it a lot of depth and atmosphere and everything.
Yeah, yeah. And I think this kind of took the portal battle in Thor and like, okay, let's just put that on steroids, and this is insane. So I ended up really liking it. I thought, I was actually surprised by how much I liked it. I thought I would enjoy it, but there's just something about, I think it's the ending that really just worked for me, which we'll get to. I thought, okay, I know, here we go. Here's going to be this epic, huge conclusion with all the special effects and huge action, and then it felt like the first time I'm like, that feels like a Jack Kirby Stan Lee story ending. Like that to me felt like, okay, that I could see that happening. Like I really enjoyed that element of it, and I give him credit for kind of going for it. I thought the performances overall were pretty solid, pretty strong cast, and I'm just gonna say I'm really excited for what they're doing with Baron Mordo. I like the decision that they made, and
agreed.
I'm thinking that, like, I know I don't want to say anything because I kind of got called out for this on saying it on Twitter, but I think the future for that character looks bright. So, if that's a spoiler, I don't know. But
I'm gonna have to go on your Twitter.
It wasn't for comic book fans. It wouldn't be a spoiler, but I realized if you're not a comic book fan, it would be. And so it wasn't a bad call out. Someone's like, that's kind of a spoiler. I'm like, oh yeah, you're kind of right, because, you know.
Wait, there are people that aren't comic book fans?
There are four. There's four.
They're all people that picked on me in high school.
but now they're comic book fans because it's cool. So that's a difference. Yeah. So why don't we do this? Why don't we take a quick break? And when we come back, we're going to get in the full details. So if you've not seen Doctor Strange yet, and my guess is if you're listening to this podcast, you probably have. So come back and listen. If not, wait till you have, and you can come back and finish our podcast. So we'll just talk to you after these short messages.
Hey guys, this is JD from the In Session Film Podcast. Every week on our show, you can join my co-host Brendan and I as we review the latest films that's out in theaters. It also inspires us to discuss a top three list of some sort, and we have a lot of other fun movie discussions as well. It's always a blast. And we also have a show on Fridays called our Extra Film Podcast. This is a show that gives us the space to talk about the latest indies and art films and other classics that we normally just don't get to talk about on our main show. You can find our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, and more. In fact, you can just see everything about us, including our social medias, at InSessionFilm.com. So join us every week. We'd absolutely love to have you.
All right, and welcome back. And yes, we're going to get into the full details of Doctor Strange. And so we're talking about a little bit of Baron Mordo, and I mentioned that. So let's get into that now. So, and not just being the general villain here. And Mads Mikkelsen played the villain. I know a huge complaint with Marvel films often is that the villain is underwhelming or just doesn't really do much in the story. How do you feel about that? And this is Doctor Strange another culprit where, you know, the villain doesn't really do anything or is underdeveloped? What were your thoughts about that?
I think Dormammu is kind of underdeveloped and Captain Pink Eye was underdeveloped. But I think for for setting up for the next movie, I think Mordo is going to be like experiencing him going from good to a misguided evil is interesting. So I have high hopes for the second movie having a villain that's kind of nicely well developed, since we went through this movie as him kind of being our friend and then kind of towards the end being a little heartbroken that he's not going to stay with Doctor Strange, because I could feel a good relationship there that they represented on screen. So it was kind of interesting seeing them go in two different directions. So I thought that was cool. So I think he's being really nicely developed by not having him straight out villain first movie and seeming to be having him as the villain in the second one. But I don't think Captain Pig Eye, I don't remember his name. I'm so sorry. I don't think he was superly well developed. The actor who played him, I've seen him in a lot of things, and he always does a great job. And Dormammu looked cool, even though he was making me kind of nauseous. The battle between him and Strange was cool, but he wasn't a developed character, I don't think.
I thought he was extremely underdeveloped because he didn't have a body.
It was a Rob Liefeld thing. They didn't know how to draw his body, so they hit it
behind something.
It's better
to not even do it than to give him like 3-foot-long hips.
On the other end of the spectrum, Chuck, Doctor Strange, obviously he's the main character, Benedict Cumberbatch. We're soon going to be seeing a lot of the Marvel characters we know and love, Iron Man, Captain America. They're probably going to go away eventually. How well do you think he stacks up against them? Do you think he'll interact well within the universe that's there? You know, were you happy the way he was portrayed on screen?
I think I was pretty happy with it, yeah. I think, like, you know, he did a good job playing to what they're trying to do. Like, they really did an excellent job making him out to be such an arrogant prick in the beginning.
Well, I think that's because he's used to that from playing Sherlock in the...
Oh, I see. I've never seen that.
But... Oh, you must watch it. It's kind of... He plays the same... almost the same. He's even more arrogant in Sherlock. So yeah. he knows how to play that role.
And, like, I don't know. I guess that's one thing I never realized about Doctor Strange, because I've only read stories where, like, he was already Doctor Strange. So I think... I only saw like the heroic side of him. I wasn't kind of aware of how he was beforehand. I just thought he was the surgeon. He was a good guy, but I never realized like he was so like egotistical and just, you know, conceited and everything, you know, thought he was the best and everything, sort of a sense of entitlement about everything. So I thought that was like a really good angle. Just because you see it come full circle kind of at the end, because it just takes so long for this point to be driven home to him, like that it's not about you, like it's like you have to drop your ego, drop your pride, like, and it just takes so long, even though like the Ancient One sort of like basically beats the crap out of him when she drags him through all the different realities, and you know, she does all these things to him, basically scares the crap out of him, you know, she leaves him stranded on Mount Everest for him to have a find a way back by himself, and like still after all those things he's still was like very conceited, thinking it was about him, and the more he studied and controlled things. And then I think it was the moment where she was dying, where they had their little talk, that he finally realized it. And you know, also the little talk, the statement she made about submitting to the river and just kind of letting the current, you know, take you, that kind of helped too. But really it was the scene where, you know, she was dying, it took him to realize, you know, what was going on, for him to get the sort of the gusto to be able to beat Dormammu the way he did, and sort of give himself up like that. But he did a fantastic job in that, and for that reason I think I really enjoyed it, just because of the stark contrast in how he begins and ends, and that just brings like a complete balance to the character when you get to the end. I thought that was pretty awesome. So
yeah, I think the one thing that kind of, it wasn't really Doctor Strange that booked me, but it was like, I felt they were very pushy with the fact that Doctor Strange was an arrogant character. Like, they had to keep mentioning that. I felt like every 10 minutes or so, someone's like, you know, but you're arrogant. You know he's arrogant. He's an arrogant guy, especially in the beginning. It was like, just to make sure that people are aware of that. But I like Benedict Cumberbatch. I thought his performance was good. I do wonder if he really needed to go with the American accent. He probably could have just used his normal voice. I don't know. Maybe people were scared that... I don't know. I don't know the reasoning behind it. Because I don't... It's not like if Doctor Strange had a British accent, it would be like, oh no, that's against the character's origin or whatever. If Captain America, maybe, but you know. But anyways, I did like him. I do think he had the look was great. He was well developed. I thought there were a lot of great character moments, and I did like the journey of the character in general. Like, I do feel like it's probably the best character origin, in the sense of where this character started and where he ended up, and kind of the complications in between since the first Iron Man. You know, I think like he is probably one of the most dynamic characters that we've got. He can be moving forward, because I don't think he's it's not like he came out and suddenly he's, you know, he's a Boy Scout now or something like that. He's still kind of a prick in a way, you know. He still has a little bit of that arrogance, but it's also kind of what allows him to go up against someone like Dormammu. And I mentioned that previously. I thought that was kind of his best moment. You do see him like have this Groundhog's Day of torture for millennia or however long. And I thought that was a great way to kind of show that Doctor Strange is not the type of character that really finishes fights with fists. He's the one that uses his knowledge and his wits to really solve situations. But the surrounding characters, what did you guys think about them? Baron Mordo, Rachel McAdams' character, the Ancient One, overall, Wong, there was a few. Anyone that stood out? Anyone you felt was worth talking about?
I thought Tilda Swinton did a really great job. I know there was a lot of controversy around her being a white female as opposed to an Asian dude. But I thought she did really good. I thought they fit her in really well with her being like a Celt from like way back in the day and everything. And I've seen her in a bunch, but everything I've seen Tilda Swinton in, I've really enjoyed her performance. I thought she did a really good job with it. She had a lot of humor, but she did portray this intelligence and really well, and this kind of like mystic sense to her, I guess, for lack of a better word. So I thought she did really great in the role, but I think she was, besides Doctor Strange himself, I think she was one of my favorite characters in the movie.
How about you, Chuck?
I really loved Wong. I thought he was fantastic. So, you know, the comedy that he brought, those couple of moments of comedic relief, it was pretty incredible. And the, you know, at the end we get to see him like laughing hysterically. I thought that was beautifully timed. But Wong, I did enjoy the Ancient One. I had zero problem with, you know, the casting there. I thought that was great. Who else? I think Greg mentioned before, I wasn't crazy about the other villain dude. What'd you call him? The pink guy? Captain Pink Guy?
Yeah, I don't remember what his actual name is.
I mean, he did okay, but I just felt like it was kind of a weak like little thing, but whatever.
Yeah, I think that's more left side of story than acting.
Baron Mordo surprised me. I ended up really liking his character because I expected them, for whatever reason, I expected them to make him evil very early on in the thing. And I like it much better the way they did it, because he sort of, I don't know, it's I wouldn't call it a friendship with Strange, but it's kind of like a, almost like a mentor teacher type of thing. He's kind of imparting wisdom on him because he can relate to him. Cause I was in your position before. He couldn't really relate to the Ancient One, but he could relate to Mordo. So I ended up really liking where they went with that. And it kind of went, you know, the opposite of what I was thinking. So I'm thinking that, like, well, they're going to make him one of the main villains in the movie, but it was actually like the Ancient One that was kind of like not technically evil, but they were suspecting her of that and stuff like that. So it kind of threw me for a little loop there, but I ended up really liking that. And my boy Scott Atkins was in there. Did you catch him? Did you see where he was?
No, was he one of the like the demon dudes? Was he the one that like he fought him in the hospital?
He was the guy he fought in the hospital and in the hallway of the sanctum and stuff like that. With the Cloak of Levitation was kind of like, you know, helping him fight him and stuff.
By the way, Cloak of Levitation, also a great character in there.
Yes.
Oh yeah. He was like carpet from Aladdin.
Yeah, he was more like a Disney like character, but I thought the cape was really awesome.
That was pretty awesome. I liked the quick reference, although I wish they would have like explained more about it. But I like how the Ancient One said, like, oh, the, you know, the Cloak of Levitation has chosen you. She's like, that's quite impressive. And it was just kind of like a passing reference, and I was kind of like, well, what is it? Like, why, you know, why is that impressive? Why, you know, where did it come from? What is it? Like, I was hoping for that, but I guess that was probably just me. But did you guys notice how many times they kept reusing the shattered glass effect throughout the movie. Was that like some sort of symbolism?
I have no idea. Dan would be better for that question. He's more in depth with his viewing than I am.
I mean, I don't know if they just kept using that effect or if it was some sort of symbolism about his broken life or his broken ego or I don't know.
I think I could see that because if you see it, like when he was using some of the powers and there would be like that almost like welding sound, like he just like it was like the Kylo Ren's lightsaber.
Yeah.
It wouldn't fully function. So I didn't personally pick that up, but I think that's a good point.
Cool. Yay, I'm finding stuff. No. You bring up, I might as well mention it now while you bring that up, but about the, you know, when they're generating the portals and you see the kind of the orange sparks flying off of the things. And even when he's like manifesting like a weapon with the orange energy and stuff. I remember talking to Greg after the movie, that the more I thought of like how they were doing that, really like made a lot of sense to me because they mentioned it as pulling energy from another dimension and sort of converting it to matter in this dimension. And if I'm thinking about that, I'm thinking it's almost like, you know, it can't be sustained for that long in this dimension. So it's almost like burning out like little ashes from a fire. And they're burning out as fast as they're converting new energy. So like, I thought that was actually a pretty cool way to represent it. I don't know if that's what they intended, if that was their reasoning, but in my head that made sense. Like that was, you know, sort of the way they could explain where this energy is coming from, this conversion. And I was like, God, that's actually kind of cool. Like that makes sense to me. I don't know if anybody else thought that, but
I think part of the reason it was like so busy at the screen, like I couldn't, all I was doing is looking at what's there and I was not even picking anything up beyond that. Yeah. But I don't know, Greg, how about yourself?
Chuck's explanation makes a lot of sense to me. I really didn't think it at the time. I was just thinking visually that was one of the things that did seem pretty cool visually to me, as opposed to all the stuff slamming together and making my brain hurt. But I thought that was one of the cool things. And then plus at the end, I believe Chuck, you like this too, where the extra credit scene where you see sparks flying and you think it's a magic portal opening or something.
Right.
But it's actually a grinder and one of the characters from earlier in the movie that was a small part, but big at the same time. Which was, what's his name? He was in Catwoman as well. But anyway, he's the guy that broke his back and he's just grinding metal there. And so it was a neat little visual kind of back and forth, I guess.
Yeah, that was well done. But sorry to get off track there, Dan, but what did you think of the supporting characters?
I really loved Chiwetel Ejiofor as Baron Mordo, like I mentioned. I just love the fact that like he is so now kind of justified in his outrage. In a way, how Ancient One is lied to him, and I think that makes it so much more interesting going forward. Because from what I remember from the comics, he had the role of Mads Mikkelsen's character, where he was, you know, he wanted to bring Dormammu because he was jealous of Doctor Strange, and that wasn't really the case. I was waiting for that to happen because there are some indications you see him like seeing Doctor Strange picking this stuff up really quickly, and like, how did you do that? And I thought, okay, here you're him going to get angry with Strange because he's picking this stuff up so quickly and he's been using it for years. But that wasn't the case. It was that he was literally devastated to know that his, you know, the person he entrusted lied to him and wasn't as pure as he hoped. And I think that's going to be interesting. And he, like, I think when Loki eventually leaves and isn't the main character, I think he'll be a good replacement. He'll be different. He's not like this charismatic, funny guy. He is more serious, obviously. His tone is a lot different, but I think that'd be a good change of pace. So I was happy about that. I love Mads Mikkelsen as an actor. He did fine. What his issues had nothing to do with him. Rachel McAdams and, Benedict Cumberbatch, what they did was okay. With many Marvel films, I'd like the fact that they did build in the fact they had a relationship beforehand, so it made a little bit more sense, and they had some chemistry, but she did kind of feel like one of the tacked-on characters, like a Natalie Portman in Thor or something like that, that you feel like in a movie or two is probably going to be going away and no one's going to miss her. And I did really like Tilda Swinton as the Ancient One. I thought she was pretty great in that role. So,
do you think we needed a a big bill actress like Rachel McAdams to play that part? Did it seem like sort of a, I don't know what you would call it, but like, it didn't seem like she had like a huge role for being such an A-list like celebrity, I guess. I don't know.
I don't think we really needed one, no. It could have been really, it probably could have been anyone.
Yeah.
I think it was more so, more of a marketing thing, because Rachel McAdams is known for some romantic comedies and things like that, or, yeah, you know, has a fan, I don't know if she has a huge fan base, but maybe they're thinking they would bring some people in, but I don't think you really needed anyone special to be that, nothing in that character was, like, all that challenging or something like, oh man, you needed Rachel McAdams, you needed an all-star actor in that role.
Right. Although the scene with the broom tipping over was hilarious when she screamed.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, she was good. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah,
but, yeah. Was there anything else you guys wanted to bring up or speak about? I mean, how did you like the action so far? I mean, the action was a little bit different. You know, anything, any scenes specifically that kind of stood out? Did you like I mentioned the fight in the hospital and within the Sanctum Sanctorum in general? Anything else that you really enjoyed scene wise?
I enjoyed the fight in the Sanctum, like, just the little weird things that they were throwing in there, like that device that he threw on him that started like locking up all of his arms and twisting them back. I thought that was pretty awesome.
That was very cool visually.
That's sort of a neat thing that we've never really seen before. And it's like, oh, wow, it's like immobilizing him. And that's like the perfect device for a sorcerer because they can't use their hands and like all this other, it's like covered his mouth and stuff. So I'm like, wow, that's actually pretty cool. And you can see why the little, the cloak was trying to get him to use that instead of the axe, where it's like, you know, you're a moron, you can't hurt him with that, like, you need this thing. That was pretty funny. But I think other than that, like, the final scene with Dormammu, I was extremely impressed with. Actually, that definitely put me over the top for enjoying this movie. Like, when they had that scene with Dormammu, and you actually, when you finally see him too, and like Greg said, the face was a little nauseating, but it's like, it was like it kept separating, but it never got further apart. Like, it was really, really strange how they did that. But I like what they did there, the whole thing. And it's just sort of this moment of gratification for the person watching the movie, because it's like this guy that outclasses Doctor Strange by, like, you know, 1,000. And you have Strange telling him, like, you know, we're stuck in this loop. This essentially makes you my prisoner. And you have Dormammu just kind of freaking out, like, release me from this, you know? And it's just like this huge, like, moment of gratitude gratification for a person watching the movie. You're like, wow, that's so cool that this guy could do this to him.
And there was a lot of, an interesting mix there in emotions. You had the humor aspect of it, but then you kind of had the sadness that he was kind of sacrificing himself. But the way he kept coming back and going, Dormammu, I am here to negotiate.
Yeah, that was the comedy every time.
Yeah, and so it was an interesting mix of emotions that they were making you feel. So I thought that was kind of a very cool aspect of it as well.
And of course, obviously, you wouldn't have been able to do any of that without the power of the time gem. So,
yeah, very cool. And you called it before the movie even started, I believe, or at least you were like early on.
I think we were like halfway through or something. Yeah,
you caught it very early, and I was like, oh, okay. But I was kind of looking for you for guidance anyway in this movie, because I think you have read more Doctor Strange than I have, definitely by far.
Maybe, I don't know, maybe a little bit, but I don't know, like, I'm familiar with some of the stuff that, like, he interacted with Eternity and Living Tribunal and stuff, and some of the crazy stuff he's done, but I haven't read, like, a ton of it, to be honest. But I was kind of holding out in the beginning that the Eye of Agamotto was literally the Eye of Agamotto. Like, I thought they were going to use it as that, like, a totally different source of power for him to defeat, you know, whatever enemy he had. But, you know, obviously, the clue with the apple kind of getting eaten and going back and forth, like, and then, you know, you sort of see it confirmed when he creates the, like, in the city, he starts undoing the damage on this large scale, and he's basically controlling it. It's like, okay, this is clearly the time gem. This is one of the two remaining stones in the MCU that we're looking for. And obviously creates the loop and everything. But I kind of thought before the movie that they were going to release the time gem. Not sure where the sixth gem, the soul gem, is going to be released. I don't know if that's going to be Guardians 2 or Thor 3 or what they're going to do there. But
yeah, I think it would have to be Guardians 2 because that's where they already had something with Adam Warlock. So
yeah, but I was happy that they came through on that. And then they actually, like, I was kind of surprised that, like, Wong actually blatantly said it out loud. Like, it's like, oh, you don't even realize you have one of the Infinity Stones. And he's like, what? He's like, oh, you have much to learn. I was like, wow, like, the other ones were sort of implied, you know, but this one, they actually, like, trying to put a little bit more focus on it because they actually, like, said it out loud because you hear them mention it, like, at the end of Age of Ultron and stuff. So definitely very cool.
So another thing that I wanted to talk about, what did you guys think of the extra scene with Thor?
I liked it. I mean, I'm curious if that's actually going to be in the movie because we saw that with the scene in Civil War with that ended up being a scene that ended up, well, I forget what movie that was in, with Bucky and Falcon.
The end of Ant-Man, right? And then it ended up in Civil War.
So does that mean Strange was going to be in trouble in Thor? Because that would be kind of cool. I think that would be kind of cool.
To help him find Strange.
I think so.
Yeah, I don't know. What, Chuck, what you think? And the other one, too, which is just the Baron Mordo thing.
Yeah, I thought that's what I took from it. I think it seems like Doctor Strange is actually going to be in Thor Ragnarok, which is pretty awesome. I was not expecting that. And you have, like, a little Defenders thing going on with him and Hulk together, which is pretty cool. If only they could bring in Silver Surfer. I wish they could, but I gotta let that go, I guess. But yeah, I'm totally looking forward to that. It seems like, to Dan's point, it seems like it almost has to be a part of a scene from that movie, because it's like, it sort of seemed like it was out of context, if you think about it, because it's like, Doctor Strange was, like, very nonchalant about talking to Thor. It's just like, yep, sitting here talking to Thor, no big deal. Like, of course, after seeing Dormammu, maybe he was just like, nothing surprises me, but that's certainly a possibility. I don't know, but it just seemed like they had been talking for a while before this scene started, you know what I mean?
I guess he's somewhat already aware, because I guess people know if, like, aliens and stuff exist, so maybe that is why he's okay with it.
I don't know. Probably.
But it's kind of like, yeah, I'm just gonna, like, he seemed just like, oh, Loki, I'll just get rid of him, you know. That's,
yeah,
I did like their interaction to begin with, so I am looking forward for that going forward. But Greg, what did you think of this?
Yeah, I thought it was really cool, and I definitely think Strange will be in Thor. I feel like the magic in that scene was a little different from the others because it was a little bit more gimmicky than what we saw throughout the entire movie, with, even though it was really funny with him bringing up tea, then a beer, and then the beer refills. So I thought it was interesting, but I really liked their interaction, and I feel like even in that scene, I feel like Doctor Strange had even more grasp of his power, and he seemed not arrogant but confident in his abilities.
Yeah, confident. I would say that. Let me ask you guys this. If this is like a weird, might be two-part question kind of thing, but do you think, this is just sort of a speculation thing, would you guys think that Loki being into some of the same type of stuff as Doctor Strange, do you think that Loki is aware of someone like Dormammu?
I would think so, because in Avengers, he talked about going into places that, you know, Thor was never aware of or knew nothing about,
right,
and that Odin would hide for them. So I would think so, to some extent, or maybe be aware that something like Dormammu exists in the world.
Yeah. How about you, Greg?
Yeah, I agree with Dan, what Dan said. He made good points.
That's because that's kind of exactly what I was thinking when he tells Thor that, you know, when he went missing sort of for all that time after the first movie, you know, and he saw things that, you know, no one else has seen and stuff like that. I was thinking he's got to know about beings like this, and even ones they're going to reveal in the future, maybe like Ego and stuff like that. You know, there's probably stuff like just knowledge that he knows that Thor has no idea of even. So, and then I guess the other thing was, this is a little bit more actually related to the movie. Do you think we've seen the last of Dormammu? Was he just kind of like the villain for this movie, and then he's kind of done? We won't see him again.
Well, I think they definitely left enough on the table that they could use him again. So maybe in a, if they like a third movie or something, or if they kind of fit him in with Mordo somehow, and he's like, so he could definitely be used again. They kind of left him open where he could be kind of used again. Even though he promised, but we all know how villains make promises, so.
Yeah, because I was thinking sort of along the same lines, but just the finality of the, you know, their bargain that he made with them. I don't know if he would be someone that would kind of go back on that deal and try it again, but I guess that would be dependent on whether or not he possesses the time gem, so. But I don't know, Dan, what do you think about that?
I'm trying to think if there were other characters that we thought would come. Like, I thought Red Skull would come back, and he hasn't. So
Yeah.
I wonder, I wouldn't doubt it. I'm trying to, at first, when we first saw, like, the image of what becomes Dormammu, I thought it was Eternity, or is that the character with, like, all the stars in him?
Yeah, it's Eternity.
So, I don't know. I'm thinking, yes, it is. The reason being, I don't see the character Baron Mordo we have right now being the type of person that would go and try to free Dormammu, because it would go against, I think, where his anger is coming from. So I would think most likely going forward, they would get different characters. Who knows? But I don't think we'll see him again.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. How about some of the, did you pick up on some of the things that they mentioned in the movie? Like, well, obviously we already mentioned, you know, the Cloak of Levitation, the Eye of Agamotto and stuff. Greg and I picked up where Mordo mentions, I think it was the staff of the Living Tribunal.
Yes.
That was pretty awesome, I thought. Nice little callback to one of my favorite characters. I'm trying to think if there was any others. I don't think they made any reference to the Vashanti, did they?
Not that I can think of.
I don't know if
they... I can't think of it either.
I don't know if they talked about the Book of Ashanti, or if they, I don't, they might have mentioned it, I'm not sure. But there was like a lot of books. Like, obviously they had like a library there, but yeah. Stanley's cameo, hilarious.
As you, yeah. Short and to the point. So yeah. I did like that. We don't want to talk about the plot overall. I mean, it's kind of your basic plot, but anything about it stand out?
I don't know if there's much more that we haven't covered. You know, we talked about some running themes, the theme of time.
Yeah.
I think there was a lot of symbolism that we might even pick up on a second look, because, you know, even how he had an obsession with the watches.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't pick that up. That's kind of, yeah.
And he kept wearing that other watch, even though it was broken, like from the accident. Like, he wore that to Kathmandu, which is pretty crazy. I don't know if it was something... I think there was an inscription, like it was given to him by someone. But it was still sort of this obsession with time. Like, he had these watches and everything. He's constantly wearing them and has this big fancy drawer full of them. And so there's a lot of symbolism there, you know, as he ended up with the time gem. So that was kind of cool. And then, obviously, Ancient One, you know, he's trying to figure out how she has sort of defied the years and stayed young looking.
Yeah. Yeah. I did like the little, like, kind of how they did represent the kind of the Dormammu's power, even though it did look like, you know, a pink eye. I thought it, you know, worked well enough. It was a nice little touch, but, and I loved a lot of little weaponry they did have. The little armor thing he used to like wrap him up. That was great.
Yeah.
I guess my only other gripe that it didn't pick. I did feel like the progression of Strange was a little quick, like, or like him being able to do what he did. I know, like, he had a, like, a, I, we'll maybe get more to it going forward, but it, like, I almost felt like you could spend more time showing him becoming that powerful sorcerer that's able to take on Dormammu or Baron Mort or, you know, these other characters, where you seem to, like, we see him reading and stuff like that, and I guess you can't spend, you know, 2 hours doing that, but it did seem like he went from, like, new student to, okay, I'm almost Sorcerer Supreme somewhat quickly.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was neat how they, like, really, they showed him working so hard, like, studying and everything, just kind of like how he tackled his medical career. You know, he's doing this the same way. And one of the neat ways that sort of manifested was they show his body sleeping. They show his astral form up reading a book, you know, studying. I thought that was kind of clever. You sort of see him like maximizing his time. Like he's, you know, even though his body's resting, he's still studying, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. But anything else before we bring this episode to a close?
One more thing, I guess. I mentioned this to Greg when we left. I think this is regarding Thanos. I think it's sort of a, I think it's a mistake to leave him on the bench this long, to be honest. I think it would have been better to at least show another little teaser of him doing some sort of manipulation. I think you run the risk of like people kind of forgetting about him and not taking him as seriously when he does appear finally in like the Infinity War movie or something like that. People are going to be like, who is this guy? Oh, yeah, we saw a couple glimpses of him. Not really sure who he is. But I think if they if they took the time to show a couple of, like, small scenes, even one little small scene in this, one little small scene in Guardians Volume 2, I think it would, like, really sort of, like, get people's attention of, like, how dangerous this guy is and give a sense of foreboding of what's to come. And as it stands now, like, there's just sort of a mystery. There's not much of a sense of foreboding or fear or anything about this guy. So I think that might be a little bit of a mistake. I could be totally wrong. I don't know. But I'm just going on to that, like, James Gunn said that Thanos would not be in the second Guardians movie. So I was disappointed in that. Obviously, maybe it's a smokescreen. You know, they don't want to give stuff away to fans, but who really knows? I was curious if you guys thought we should see more of Thanos or if you like how they're doing it, sort of keeping him in the shadows.
I think it is taking way too long because it's legitimately almost a decade now since we've kind of got the ramblings. And at this point, like they haven't represented him as a threat, really. I don't feel like he is this incoming doom that's going to, we have to worry about. That's like, oh no, just wait till Thanos shows up, because yeah, he's kind of lost every time.
Right.
And so that's kind of the issue of starting him now. It's like he's going to do it himself. That was like 3 years ago and he hasn't really done anything. So
yeah.
I do agree. Like, I think I appreciate them taking time. Like, we're going to build this, but I think they have waited a little bit too long. And now when he does come, I don't see it. I don't know if they could, you know, make it work or make that payoff as huge as we would like it to be.
At the very least, they'd have to spend more time in that movie sort of explaining him. You know what I mean? So you're taking up real estate within that movie. But what do you think, Greg?
Yeah, I agree with you guys. But I guess I just gotta, you just gotta have faith that they've been building it this long, that they're not gonna let something silly like that kill their upward battle here that they've been winning at. So, like, I think it's a matter of just having faith with Marvel and Kevin Feige that he's been in it this long and that they have it all masterminded and planned out and everything. So I think it's just a matter of faith at this point. But yeah, I would like to see some more of Thanos.
Nice. I'm thinking like Thor Ragnarok's going to become a key movie here, because like we might get a little tidbit in there. I don't know. Because I feel like no one's talking about that movie too awful much. I know it's a long way off, but like you have.
Well, yeah, and then you also have Thor hasn't been the really popular one in the whole bunch. He's kind of, his movies have been a little bit thing. So
yeah, like, you know, we have people, you know, focusing on the big Infinity War movie, the Captain Marvel movie, Black Panther, Spider-Man, stuff like that. But I think people are kind of overlooking Thor Ragnarok a little bit. It might be a key piece to the puzzle, so to speak.
It's telling that the scene in this was Thor and not Guardians and not Spider-Man, which is coming up, which I thought it would be. So that has me interested. I'm wondering if, like, how that works.
Yeah.
But, alrighty. Cool. All right. Are you guys ready to bring this episode to a close?
Indeed. Unless we just want to do an infinite loop of talking about Doctor Strange.
All right. Let's make a bargain.
General thoughts. Right. What do you guys think of that?
All right. Well, if you want to get in contact with us, you can do so by going to Geekcast Radio or emailing us feedback@geekcastradio.com or on Facebook and Twitter. Just search Talking in Circles, DCRN. You guys are also on Twitter. What are your Twitter names?
I am at Heroic Age Chuck.
And I am at The Create Forge.
And I am at Movie Revolt. And anyways, that'll be it for this week. We'll be back next week. Same time, same channel, same podcast feed. But for now,
this has been Chuck.
This has been Greg, or Dr. Pink Eye.
This has been Dan, hopefully not getting pink eye. And we've been talking in circles. We'll see you next week.
I don't think it translates through the computer, Dan.
Do you know what causes pink eye?
Yeah, it's like you get dirt in your eye, and it's kind of like an infection, pus, and stuff.
If I remember correctly, it's actually fecal matter that causes it.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you for that lovely image.
If you get pink eye, you have literally crap in your eye.
Why don't they call it brown?
That's a good point.